time, you can introduce the speaker. Yeah. And it's really a pleasure. I told Cheryl that I would MC, and I love being that support. Cheryl and I go back quite a while and have shared a lot of the struggle. And what's the beautiful part about that is no matter how long one has been in recovery, when one gets a relationship that touches the heart, the growth continues. And so through our relationship, it's been all about accepting one another and accepting us, each other. It's a part about loving ourselves, loving each other until we can love ourselves. And so the fact that she was willing to join has really touched my heart, because I don't know if you said yes before. So I'm grateful you're here, and I'd like to introduce Cheryl.
Thank you. Yay. All of a sudden, I'm really nervous. I remember the 5 people last month. I think that's why I agreed to this. No. No. You know what? It's, I've been in, I'll speak more, but I've been in programs since Thanksgiving of 2006. And the cliche, but I always feel like I'm coming home and that I'm with friends and that I'm safe. So I will get through this, and I'm so, so grateful to be here. I thought Amy was a lunatic to ask me, you know, why me? You know, I'm not typical anything. I'm not the typical recovering bulimic. I don't have a significant amount of recovery under my belt. But the one thing I've done perfectly is I keep coming back. That's all I've done, and it's working for me. And I have, I'll respect anonymity, but I have 2 sponsors in the room, and because of you two, I'm alive, and I love you, and I'm very grateful. And through program, I've made a lot of friends in other 12-step flavors, AA, CA, and I found out, you know, whatever our drug of choice, we're all the same. So thank you for being in the room. And all of a sudden, I'm really nervous. I, as I'm sure a lot of you can relate, as a bulimic, I don't remember the last time I've cried. So knowing my luck today, I'll probably just start sobbing right in front of all of you. But I will, if that's what's meant to be, I will let it be. So when Amy came to me, she wanted me to share an adventure I had with you. And I put a lot of thought into it, and I think it's important. You know, we all get certain gems from someone that we hear speak at a meeting or someone that offers to sponsor us, and that's what draws us in. That's what we can relate to. So by doing the podcast and by having newcomers here, if I can keep one person in program, then this is all worth it. So today I will, and I wrote notes, I hope I won't read to you, but if I freeze, I have them to refer. I will tell you about my great adventure, but I was thinking about it in proper form of a typical speaker meeting. I'm supposed to tell you about what it was like then. And I have had a lot of what you would call adventures. I remember one day I binged and purged 16 times in a 24-hour period. And my body was so ravaged. I remember my throat was on fire, and I couldn't swallow, and my belly was completely distended. Thankfully, I think the only reason I stopped and didn't do 17 times is I passed out on the floor. So that was one of my adventures. I remember once that whatever I was eating got stuck in my body. Sometimes it doesn't come right up and down. I physically started punching myself in the diaphragm, hoping to get it up. I bruised myself. I was twisting. I was squatting. I looked in the mirror, and my face was purple with my eyes bulging. I was hoping I had beer in the refrigerator, and I thank God I don't have a problem with alcohol that I know, but it was, the genius idea came to me that the bubbles would break things up, so I swallowed 2 cans of beer. Nothing came up, so I had all this food and 2 cans of beer in me. The thought occurred to me that I could die that evening if I kept trying to push it out, and to be honest with you, I didn't care. I just wanted it out. I remember I used to have 4 roommates. I was in a full house, and ritually, every single night, I would have to stay up probably till about 2:30 in the morning till every last one of them went to bed so that I could pull all this food I had from under my bed that I had stored and gathered like a squirrel, all this junk food. And sometimes I'd remembered that they hadn't finished their food, and so I'd dig it out of the trash. And so at 2:30 in the morning, I'd eat my dinner. And then to hide all the wrappers, I would gather the trash real quick, walk outside, go to the alley. This was not the best neighborhood. In 2:30 in the morning, I'm throwing trash out. After that, I had the genius idea that I should do an exercise video. So I would do my exercise video and then go to bed. Our wake-up call was 6:30 a.m. to start a full day work. So you can imagine I was in pretty great shape. That was quite an adventure. I could go on and on. I remember going to the grocery stores, and you know, you can get away with murder if you look sweet and innocent. And I used to tell them that, oh, I've left my bag of groceries here. Have you found them? You know, I had not been there. They, being customer is always right, being very nice, they apologized. I'm sorry, I don't know where your groceries might have been. Why don't you gather up what you had, you know, and take it out. And you know what? I didn't think I was doing anything wrong, because it's not like I was getting steaks or anything expensive. I purposely got cheap stuff, so I justified it was okay. It was fine. So those are just a few. I'm very adventurous spirit. Those are a few of my adventures. Thank God I found OA Thanksgiving of 2006. Right then and there, I didn't know what was to happen, but I knew my life would never be the same. I don't think I was ever one of those rock bottom type of people. Ironically, despite what I've told you, I thought that I had commingled very nicely with my bulimia, that I had, you know, that I was thriving, that I had a life, you know, I hadn't gone to jail. I only went to the hospital 4 times in a year. To me, that was a pretty good average. You know, there is no such thing as a rational mind of a bulimic. It's a crazy monkey in there. And, like I said, since 2006, I've come and I keep coming. I've had periods of abstinence. I did a 90 and 90 where I had a significant amount of, abstinence. But to be quite honest, there was always a part of me that never wanted to give it up. Again, the insanity, you know, who would tell the stories that I've told? And, well, it still works for me. I still kind of want to keep that around. But always, always, there's this little fire in me, this little something that knew there could be more, that wanted more. If nothing else, I figured, hey, I'll go to the meetings. That's 1 hour. I'm not binging and purging. And that for years, that's pretty much, you know, that's all I could do. Just 1 hour of abstinence in a day. Someone said in a meeting something recently that was very profound to me. She said, as long as you're in your addiction, you cannot grow. It will stunt your growth. You'll always be where you are now, miserable. This sat with me. And up to this point, I always thought grow means give fat and get up, or give up and get fat. And no way was I signing up for that. I always thought that it was some kind of trickery where they make you gain weight and, you know, they make you think it's wonderful, but they're really trying to trick you and they're all jealous, you know, crazy, crazy. But this growth thing stuck with me. Again, that little fire was like, you know what, maybe I want more. And for some reason, I started to care. I was curious about this growth thing. So what's like now? I titled this Adventures Are Survivors. I think those of us that have a true adventurous spirit have overcome trauma, have been abused in some way, and I've had a lot of abuse, a lot of it self-inflicted. But I am an abuse survivor. I'm a sexual abuse survivor, which I'm 39, and I just realized that probably about 6 months ago. I'll tell you this story. In April 2011, I received a picture of me as a little girl with my father. That triggered me. All of a sudden, a mental folder opened up, and it had been shut down my entire life. I always knew in my soul something had happened to me, but I blacked out my childhood, which is very common when you've suffered from abuse. All of a sudden, in April, I started remembering bits and pieces. At 38 years old, I didn't know what to do with this. I don't know, where do you file this? What do I do with this? Do I process this? Do I, become childlike? Do I integrate this as part of my being? I was completely lost. The first thought was, I don't want to be a guest on the Mari Povich show and have, you know, those people you always watch on TV and think they're incredibly interesting to watch, but you cannot relate to them, and you think they're absolutely beyond a freak or a weird person. I didn't want to be one of those people that you gasp when you hear their story or feel sorry for them, but I can't imagine being them. I just wanted to die. Thank God I had been in program for 6 years now. And I always get clarity through my dreams. I had a dream that I was on the top of a mountain, and this huge hand came down and touched my hand. I knew it was my higher power. I recalled that a friend of mine climbs Mount Kilimanjaro every year. So I called him the next morning, I met him, and I booked my flight. So I figured, what do I have to lose? I want to die, so, you know, I might as well take a nice trip before I do something drastic. It turned out to be the most amazing summer of my life. My training was very unbulimic-esque. I didn't do it intensely. I didn't do it obsessively. I did it because I loved it, and I saw the most beautiful hikes in the mountains. I saw red rocks at sunrise. I rode my bike to feel the breeze in my hair. It was the best summer of my life. I don't know what I enjoyed more, the actual trip or the preparation up to it. Both my sponsors went on with me on the hikes. It was amazing. And it miraculously, nice word. It was abstinent. And really, I didn't even think about it. It kind of came along with it, where it wasn't an option. I was content. I was happy. And I had something to live for. I had this trip coming up. The night before the trip, I had a panic attack. I totally freaked out. Like, what in the world am I doing? I'm crazy. This is insane. I was alone. And so I called my sponsor. I said, a big part of me wants to just crawl into my closet and pretend I went for 2 weeks. You know, I'll just tell everyone I went. You know, I'll hang out in the closet, and then in 2 weeks I'll come out, share some stories about a mountain. And my sponsor said, okay, you know, well, just let me know either way. I need to come visit you in the closet if you're going to, you know, if you choose to do that. So she gave me permission, you know, to be me. And that was such a blessing. So something greater than myself got me out of the closet and packed my bag and got me to the airport, and I was headed for the adventure of my lifetime. At the Detroit airport, there was a sign in a window I took a picture of. It said, life begins at the end of your comfort zone. And I said, okay, I'm listening. I'm paying attention. I had lots and lots of mishaps on my way getting to Tanzania with Kilimanjaro. The biggest mishap was my mountain luggage for the climb was left behind in Amsterdam. So I got to the airport to find that I didn't have any luggage. This was at 9 p.m. on Monday, and we were supposed to start the climb at 6:30 a.m. on Tuesday. I thought it was over. I'm like, I'm sitting there in flip-flops, like, there is no way I am going, I've lost my chance. They're not going to take me. My leader gathered the 11 women in my group, the three guys, and together they had a sleeping bag, shoes, a raincoat. They had all this gear for me. The funny thing is, and I know a lot of you can relate to this, if you had any idea the painstaking manner in which I gathered all the perfect gear, I am not joking. I went on Consumer Guide and World Report. There was about 35 things on the list. Each item, I went on the Consumer Guide to find which was rated the best. Then I would research three websites to find the best price. Then I'd have to know which color matched which. I needed polar fleece 200, not 300. I went through the entire process. It took me months to gather for this gear, which I had none of it. And so I started the trek in size 9 shoes. I wear a 7.5. If any of you have ever worn other people's clothes, you really don't feel that pretty. Yeah, I was wearing these ridiculous colors, all kinds of shapes and sizes, but I was going. That's all I cared about. And again, I figured God has a really good sense of humor, because all that luggage, it's sitting in Amsterdam. I don't even have it, and I was just fine. I actually, it was crazy. I felt lighter. There was something energetically, I just felt lighter, like the pressure was off. I felt great because I knew the odds had been stacked against me. You know, if I didn't make it to this climb or to summit, I didn't have my gear, you know, a good excuse. It was nice. So for 6 days, I went into a walking meditation. It was like no one else was around me. I was just in a zone. I felt like the mountain, I felt like I'd been there all my life. I just met this mountain, and it was breathtaking. And they always refer to Kilimanjaro as her. And so we would look at her in the distance. And I liked that. I had given myself till day 3. I said, after that, if I don't get my luggage, I'm going to quit. Because after that, it was going to get really dark and really cold and dangerous. And it's not worth it. So I just left it up to the universe if I was meant to carry on or not. So day 3, I'm sitting in my tent. We're getting ready for bed. And this little porter came up the mountain with this headlight and all 35 pounds of my big duffel on his head, and says, "Ma'am, here's your luggage, hand delivered to my tent." I don't know how he did that. A part of me was disappointed. I'm like, darn, now I have no reason. You know, I got to do this. I have no excuse anymore. And everyone else was very envious. Up to that point, you know, several of them had urinated all over their shoes, you know, in bad aim. They had filthy clothes from the 2 rains we had. And I had all this fresh new stuff. I felt pretty. It was really nice, you know, to get into my own stuff. After that, it was just a blast. We climbed something called Barranco Wall, which is like a rock climbing wall. We hiked around a lava tower. It was amazing. I remember in our dining tent, Sean, our leader, he said to us, "Eat like a pig and drink like a fish." And again, I'm like, no problem, you know, I can do that. But we were burning about 4,000 to 4,500 calories a day. So I knew, it was interesting, I knew going into this that this was the plan, and I didn't quite know how I would handle it. And my friend in program said, you know, bring the canned tuna, bring the, and I'm like, no, you know, I'm just going to kind of go with it. But it was weird when he promised us, he said, "Do exactly as I tell you, and I promise you, you won't gain any weight." He must have known he was talking to 11 women. So I don't know why, but I believed him. I was like, okay. And it didn't occur to me, but that was the first time in 38 years that I ever truly surrendered, where I ever truly ate to nourish my body, to fuel, like you would put a gas in a car. And it was mechanically. I ate, I drank, I did it because I wanted to climb this mountain. I didn't care about anything else. It was a very different experience for me. And thank God, throwing up was not an option. You know, there was no place to do it. And if you did it, I would die. And I was caring at this point, thank God. Another interesting thing is everyone had talked from the beginning, oh, I got to get to this summit. I'm going to conquer this mountain. I want to reach the summit. And I think very true to who I am. To me, that was not the most important thing. It's I think as Americans and just as people, you know, that's our goal. We always try, you know, what is my weight loss goal? What is my career goal? When I make this, I'm going to be happy. When I lose this, I'm going to be happy. You know, there's this summit, and I knew not to set myself up for that, and I would have been sad if I didn't make it, don't get me wrong, but to me, it would have been so sad not to embrace and enjoy the experiences along the way, and I lived so much in the present, you know, at the Barranco Wall. I was at the Barranco Wall. I wasn't thinking about summit. At the lava tower, I was at the lava tower, and that was such a gift, and I... So much of this trip related and I translated into my program. I even thought about all my hiccups along the way with the luggage and everything, and rain, and you know, all kinds of things that came along. I kind of looked at them as my relapses in program that, you know, through those relapses have been the greatest lessons that I've learned, and they've made me more confident. I was so much more confident going up the rest of that mountain knowing that I had my stuff, and I had been fine without my stuff. Summit day was tough. Up to this point, I was doing just fine because I did exactly as they said. I ate what I needed to eat. I drank what I needed to drink. We hiked for 10 hours, and then we rested for 4 hours. We got up at 11 p.m. in order to reach summit by sunrise. I slept in every single piece of clothing I had because I was really cold, and I thought, I'm going to save as much time so I can, you know, if I can get 20 minutes more sleep, I'll wear all my clothes. I don't need to get dressed. I was so scared, and I was so numb, but I was so happy and so excited. I took it one, literally, again, so symbolic of my program, one step at a time. I remember saying to myself, I was so tired, I said, I think I can do one more step. Then I do that step. They said, I think I can do one more step. I did this for 8 hours. This got me up the mountain. It was quite eerie. It was dark. It was pitch dark. So all you could see was a string of headlamps going up the mountain. And then the higher you go, you see people coming down, and some of them are limp, some of them are unconscious. It was scary. Some of them were like rag dolls. I didn't realize it, but our porters, they started singing to us in Swahili, and I just thought it was for entertainment, but they were singing "Don't Be Scared, Little Girl" in Swahili, so I did not know that, but they were trying to calm our nerves, and it was really nice. I thought on that particular portion of the trip, I thought, what would happen to me if I thrown up just once? Mm-hmm. And I cared. It really meant a lot to me. So I got to a point called Stella's Point. It's about 45 minutes to summit. You can see her. You could see the summit from there. And at that point, I was spent. I was completely exhausted. I had trekking poles in my hand, but I was so tired, I couldn't grip them. So I just formed a C with my hand, and I would just move the C forward and back. And I didn't think I could do it. I didn't have one more step left in me. I remember Teo, our leader, came up to me and patted me on the back, and he said, "Sista, you are very strong." And I'm like, thanks. You know, why is he focusing on me? You know, what? And I was totally unaware of anyone else around me, but unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize I was the only girl that had gotten to this point with all my gear on. All the other girls had had to give up their bags because it was too hard. And again, I had to laugh. I'm like, Wouldn't you know it? It's, again, so bulimia-esque. You know, no one's going to help me. I'm going to do it on by myself. You know, I don't need your help. But I was really proud of myself. Teo pushed me on a rock. He kind of just sat me down for a break. And then this little guy came with some tea with lots of sugar in it. And after I had the tea, I got rejuvenated. And I don't know where this little guy came from. Keeping in mind, it's almost, you know, I'm at 19,000 something feet, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if my higher power sent this little guy, or, you know, if they just hang out waiting for visitors. But there was a little guy. After that, it gave me that burst. It gave me, we all know that sugar high. It gave me what I needed to get to the top, 45 minutes. When I got there, I was overwhelmed by emotions. I didn't know what it was because I don't experience this as a bulimic, but I, what they call welled up. I welled up. My chest was full. I could feel the tears coming to my eyes, but I didn't know what it's like to cry freely, and I was completely overwhelmed. And there were a lot of people. There's a lot of traffic up there at Summit. I was not alone. It was interesting experience. And what came to me was, I think 20 plus years of emotions were coming to the surface at that point. You can't spend a lot of time at Summit because the altitude is so extreme. At that point, it's almost 20,000 feet. So you literally, yay, I made it, I take a photo, da-da-da, on your way down. for some reason, that never occurred to me, that you need enough energy, enough stamina to get down off this mountain. You know, everyone's so focused on Summit. So that was a challenge. That was the toughest part for me, I think. It was a long road. I was delirious. I was tired. I kept falling. But I made it down to the bottom. And it was interesting because at that point, I emotionally had a big down, and I'm sure a lot of you can experience this, you know, especially I think with bulimics, we get such a high, a rush. And it's that hangover, that down, you know, now what? You know, now what do I have? What do I look forward to? All the food's gone. All the, you know, I've reached the summit. Now what? So unfortunately, that carried with me home. That I was pretty much where I had started. I was very depressed. I had the hangover. You know, I was so proud of my accomplishment, but it was over. And I'm left sitting with, shit, you know, I'm still having these dreams. You know, I'm still having to deal with, face what I'm remembering. And I realized it's most people digest their experience as a bulimic, I don't digest. I don't digest food. I don't digest experience. So I probably should have had a process where after this trip, you just sit and you remember and you enjoy and digest. And I don't do that. Someone told me in program that, you know, we don't let things stick to our bones. And so, again, I just wanted to die. Funny thing, when you ask your higher power for something, it does come. I immediately knew that, again, in my dream, a thought came to me, get your butt back in program. You know, that's your next summit. You need to do program hard and strong. And I had realized, you know, I had been physically fit. Now time to be spiritually fit. Thank God I had someone I had in mind, someone special I had picked, and we immediately started doing the steps from step one. She promised me that if I did the 12 weeks abstinent, a miracle would happen. And my adventurous spirit was drawn in once again. I figure, I wonder what this miracle is all about. So, and she's very good. I'm very lucky because she is not of our program. She's of another program. So she said, I guarantee this to you. And to prove it in 12 weeks, if you don't feel any differently, if you haven't had a miracle, we'll binge together. We'll have a big binge. She offered to join, and it's right around Thanksgiving, perfect time. She'll happily refund my misery. So that's where I am today. I'm on the eighth step. I'm abstinent, which is a miracle. I'm in the middle of the step work. I always used to be too busy binging and purging to do anything like my Kilimanjaro adventure. And that's the story I wanted to tell you guys. What I learned is it's not only the experience of doing what you're doing at the time, but it's how you grow as a person. Experiences change you. And I think that my trip to Kili was kind of like fertilizer for my growth, same as working the steps. I constantly refer back to subtle experiences of the mountain day. I remember him telling us that, you know, if we ate, we wouldn't gain weight. And unfortunately, life does not offer you that guarantee, I'm sorry to say. But what it translated to me is, you know, if you surrender yourself to your higher power, it will be okay. Everything will be as it should. I've gained and maintained about a 10-pound weight since that trip, and I can say with all honesty, I never thought these words would come out of my lips, but I feel fantastic. I am thrilled, and if it keeps creeping up, I'll be okay. I don't even know because I don't have a scale, but all of a sudden other things are more important. I keep remembering the time and the energy that I spent on that freaking gear in the list, and then I didn't even need it. So since I've been home, I'll maybe not make my bed some mornings. I'll let the dust bunnies pile up in the corner, and it feels good. It feels really, really good just to relax. I remember I was humbled by the beauty of the mountain as the sun rose above the peak that I was standing on. And as I looked down onto clouds, and I was on the rooftop of Africa, so I saw Africa as this little teeny, it gave me a glimpse of, you know, what's out there and the difference. And to me, I equate it to the telescope. You know, when you flip that telescope around and you're looking at through the wrong end, you know, when you're so obsessed about gaining a pound or the exercise program that I missed on one day, I'm like, what a waste. You know, it just saddens me. A part of me wants to go back to my basement and sit with the carton of this and the six pack of this, but it's still that little fire that burns inside me that I want another adventure. I want to hang around for this miracle. So I'll almost end with another quote that really stuck with me that one of my friends in program said, "Our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate, but that we are powerful beyond measure. It is not our light, not our darkness that frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, handsome, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so other people won't feel insecure around you. We were born to make manifest the glory of God within us. It is not just in some, it is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our fear, our presence automatically liberates others." It's very simple. I no longer care to be small. I have work to do and adventures to find. And to all the newcomers, I just wanted to remind you that you only get one shot at this life. It's only once. And if you don't live it to the fullest, if you're in your eating disorder, you're stagnant. Nothing wonderful can be experienced. That's it. It's your chance. And right now, I'm choosing more. With your head in the toilet or your head in a carton of this or that, the miracles are just going to pass you by. So thank you very much for letting me be your sponsor. Thank you, speaker, not sponsor. For all of you in podcast land, I brought some pictures of her, the beautiful mountain that I'll pass along. and me at the summit, which I'll share with everyone. And I can't wait to hear everyone else share, because that's what keeps me coming back. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl.
My name is Amy, food addict bulimic. And it's just really gratitude. Because watching somebody else when it's so hopeless. And that's how I was when I came in this recovery. I gave up. I thought I was going to die here. And it works. It really works just by coming. And I just love the packing story, because, good Lord, everybody has to listen to me pack for a night, overnight, you know, trying to get the perfect thing. And part of that is just a commitment to being comfortable, because as a bulimic, life is so uncomfortable, you know, and that's what I binge and purge about. So the fact that you survive without your clothes is like a miracle. I'm like, how did you do that? Size 9. Anyway, and I'm just so grateful that people, you know, this program takes work, and all you guys that drove, thank you, because that inspires me, because left to my own, I don't want to do anything, but every time I show up, I'm given one more day, and I just, in sharing with Cheryl, you know, the fact that that magic moment when you come, and you're absent for 8 weeks, hello, you know, I don't believe it in sharing. And so I'm just so grateful. You guys fill my heart, you know. It gives me one more day, and I'm so encouraged. It is a grace. It is a grace, because left to my own, life is uncomfortable. I have to do at it, and purging makes sense. You know, it still makes sense. I've been here 31 years, and it's still just a daily grace. So I'm really, really moved. So thank you.
I'm Shana, food addict and bulimic, and I apologize for being late, but I'm so glad I got to hear your story. I haven't heard it. And Cheryl and I we've been through a lot, and she's always been there for me, and I would not still be here if it wasn't for you, so, along with a lot of other people in OA. But I am so inspired by that, and it's just such a... For me, it's more, I take your journey as more of a metaphor of life in general. And it's interesting. My personal life has changed hugely. Mm-hmm. And so I've really been concentrating on my work life. And I had this big interview and blah, blah, blah. And I got the feedback. And one thing that really that was brought up was, if you're going to lead a team, you need to be inspirational. And they didn't see that in me at this time. And I was listening to a spiritual speaker, and he was talking about how you have to be around people who inspire you, and to be inspired, mm-hmm. and to be inspirational. And that's a huge reason why I'm here, is because you all inspire me so much. Because where I come from, you just get through life. You know, you're not inspired. I mean, give me a break. I mean, to me, you know, if I said that to somebody, you know, one of my parents, it would just be like, what are you talking about? Just, you know, get up to your room and do something, or, you know, go to school, quit complaining. And so it's just, compared to where I started to where I am, it's just amazing, and where I can go. And I think the hard part about this is doing the steps and everything is so humbling. And I think my ego dies a little bit every time, because there is no room for ego if you want to grow. There is no room. And most of my life, well, all my life, I've been led by that. That's all I knew. And so I am just really grateful to be here. And I know this is a place, this is the place for me. I am just so happy to see everybody and connect again. So thank you.
Thank you. Daya, recovering food addict, bulimic. I think the thing that really sticks to me is the keep coming back part. You know, because it's the keep, you know, just don't stop, the keep part of coming back, no matter what. And that always helped me. because I think in between when I was doing everything perfectly, you know, there was triggers I was unaware of. And then it would ultimately lead to a relapse. And then eventually I put together a trigger list of what, and I guess it grows, of what would make me not have abstinence. And I think anytime I put down the food, what would come up for me was family of origin pain that I hadn't dealt with, critical voices that I acquired from my childhood, from, you know, things that I thought had to be a certain way, and if I didn't get it done the right way, that would be a trigger for me. I'm sensitive. My whole entire family, we were born sensitive, and that, you know, it's pretty neat when I do something, like when I make a mistake, and I can say to myself, that's usually a trigger for me. You know, usually that would send me to the refrigerator. And then at that point, I just sit there and almost want to laugh, because usually that would be, you know, what would be shame, you know, I'd be shaming myself. And so it's almost as if I want to test myself to see if that's going to, how long that's going to be a trigger for me. But another thing is, whenever I put down the food, what would come up was tears that I hadn't shed, memories, things, just a whole bunch of things I had no clue was happening. And I don't know, it was just stuff, you know, unshed tears, just, and now I want, you know, just seeing everybody here, you know, people like me, makes me think, gives me the hope that they're going to do it, I'm going to do it, we're all going to do it. You know, we're all going to, you know, I'm going to start feeling my emotions and accepting my mistakes and, you know, just bypassing all my triggers, respecting them, of course, and just doing the opposite, you know, living my life in oppositional, you know, doing the exact opposite of what I've been doing. And the steps, too. You know, just living my whole entire life, never knowing that that's the way you're actually supposed to live your life, you know, the steps. I never knew that that's the way you're supposed to live your life. And that was a big trigger for me, not being able to do that. But I'm going to let somebody else share.
My name's Susan, recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Well, I had to wait to speak because I was so overcome with emotion. And even now, I should have waited a little longer. But as a mountain climber, I'm not a major mountain climber, but I've hit a few 14ers. And so that feeling that you have when you get to the top, boy, it's just tough to describe if you haven't done it. It's really amazing. And I wanted to compose myself because I wanted to make some points about what in just that whole story was such a great metaphor for recovery. And I think that when you said that about the dream and how this hand comes down and touches you and you decide to go to a mountain, I mean, I just thought that was such a beautiful reaction to something. I mean, that took so much courage, you know, especially in the midst of our disease. So many times we're paralyzed by where we're at. I mean, it's a paralyzing thing. You know, it's kind of like we don't want to get out of the closet. I mean, we don't even, to actually go to take all those steps to get there. I mean, you know, you think about, I mean, passports and shots, and I mean, it's just an unbelievable thing that you achieved. And it's just so amazing. I mean, it's just an amazing story of recovery. And I think that an experience like that carries you. I mean, it's like a fertilizer for the whole rest of your life. That was another great metaphor that you said, that, you know, you have got that surrounding you now, and you're kind of, you know, steeping in it, and you can draw on it. You can draw the nutrients that are going to come out of that. And even though, you know, and I could see that, you know, I like, when I'm coming down off of a 14er and I've been hiking for 18 hours and I know that feeling of the step, and actually going down's worse because it beats the hell out of your legs. But, you know, just one step in front of the other and just the achievement of what that's all about. I mean, that is just incredible. And I guess I just want to share that I don't think I'm going to be benching this weekend. So thank you so much. Awesome.
Thanks, Susan.
Hi, I'm Stephen. I exercise bulimic.
Hi, Stephen.
And I'll try not to cry too. Well, actually, I did earlier, but I have dark glasses on. Definitely the way to go. I showed up in LA a few years ago and left, but this time around, I keep coming back. And I keep on being amazed, and I know I'm not even halfway through. I'm amazed by just about everybody that I run into. You know, like I got to participate a little bit in the assembly and in the intergroup and some other things. There cannot be any other organization on earth that works like this one. I've never seen anything like it. People aren't playing politics, you know, they're not finding fault with each other at all. They're just supporting each other and everything. This is unreal. I'm wondering, where did you all come from? I don't care, but when you leave, take me with you, you know? I was really inspired by your story, Cheryl. I'm really glad you went for it. And I'm glad your sponsor said, okay, do what you want, because that's probably what got you to go. That's what worked for me. And I'm really glad that I'm not the only one that has to research a minor purchase for weeks online, you know? At home, I have about 30 tabs open for in my browser for car seat covers. Okay. I bought two sets, and one went back. The other one is going back. I finally settled on one. It was the cheapest one I looked at, and it's worth more than the resale value of the car that I put in. I'm glad there's someplace I can go where I can say that, and it's cool. That everybody relates to it. Thanks again.
My name is Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hi, Mark.
I was very moved. I was very moved, and I really, I've met you before, and but I didn't hear the whole story. And you know, one of the things that struck me is 21 years ago, I quit drinking and doing drugs, and that's when I stopped purging. After 23 years of purging, I started when I was 14. My father taught me. Father-son thing, you know? And I stopped purging and I put on a bunch of weight when I got sober. And I went to... the other day I was in Aurora, Saudi Aurora, and I was driving across Mississippi, across I-225, and 21 years ago I was standing on that bridge, and I was going to jump, because I had been to see my shrink who had opened up a door, and all of this stuff came flooding out about being sexually abused by my mom from the time I was an infant until I was about 11 years old. And then all kinds of other stuff, physical and emotional. And I stood on that bridge that I was driving over. All of a sudden, I realized where I was. And I was going to jump. And you started to talk about this big hand. And what scared the hell out of me is I felt this giant hand coming down and grabbing me inappropriately on this bridge. And it was all the things that had happened to me that were like boiling up. And when I binged and purged and when I drank, it kept them down. It kept them locked away. It kept the door slammed shut. And I had been going to enough meetings that this guy's voice came in my head, and it's a long involved story, but his wife had died of 50 years and his dog had died, and he was in incredible pain. And he started thinking, what could he do to get through the pain? And he realized maybe he could do what they taught him in the rooms of just one day at a time. Just one day at a time could I do this pain and humiliation. And that's the only reason I didn't jump off the bridge. But I went on a couple of years later to get into OA, and then I started having adventures myself. Really cool. I climbed some 14ers. I don't start easy. I started with Long's Peak, you know. And then I started jogging, and 6 years in a row I did this 200-mile relay race out in Oregon from the top of Mount Hood to the Pacific Ocean. With like, you do it with a team of like 12 people, and it's just amazing. And I got all these things I did. And my life, I got a life like you talked about. Unfortunately, after about 8 years, I kind of got cured. And I quit going to OA meetings, and I quit praying for abstinence. And I stayed clean and sober, and the other things that I do, I stayed. But I went back out on food. And gained. I didn't gain the 100 pounds back, but I gained 70 pounds back. And it has been the last few years, even though I've been clean and sober, and that's been good. Things that I could do with my body that I had rediscovered in OA, I couldn't do anymore. And I finally got back into the rooms after like 10 years, and it's been really, really hard for me. And I don't really know exact how much abstinence I have now, but I think it's maybe 5 months or 6 months. And things are coming back again. I'm starting to be able to do stuff, and it was just so inspirational to hear and remind me of what I, you know, what I got before, and inspire me to, you know, I can do it again, you know, it's not too late. And thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Ace. I'm a bulimic compulsive eater, anorexic.
Hey. Hi, Ace.
Hey. I'm a little nervous myself. All I kept thinking about was how, for people who are struggling with this, how we need other people to hold the light for us sometimes. And how getting through that one day can just be this little seed of faith, because someone told you that if you stopped binging and purging, and if you stopped going to the food, that life would be worth living, you know? And I'm so grateful to have heard your story tonight, you know, and I relate to so much. I know for me, my eating disorder started right after, when I was 11, right after I was sexually abused. And I think that that's kind of, when I look back on it and hear your story tonight, it makes me think about how, you know, oh, that was the time when I decided that life would be too painful without the use of something. Not even a decision, just almost just a body, out of body thing. And now, you know, we're all taking the risk to believe that that we could live, that I, you know, could live life, and that it can be beautiful and wonderful without the use of all these things that I've used for so many years to cope with pain. And the 12 steps are, you know, I love what your sponsor said, like, if give it a shot, you know, what do you have to lose? If in 12 weeks the miracle hasn't happened, I'll binge with you. I'm going to remember that. I'm looking at my sponsor right now. you know, the program holds the hope. And, just thank you so much for your share. And I as well just loved the way you ended it with that, the quote, and I've heard that piece before, and it's beautiful, and I think it's completely true for every human on this planet. And here we are, given hopefully a set of tools and a set of steps and people in our lives to help us live our life not from a place of fear. And, you know, that's a gift. So, thanks.
Thank you. I'm Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Robin.
Hi, and really touched as well by your story in so many ways. And just so grateful to be in a program of such amazing adventures and everyday boring life and decisions that change your life when they're just hanging in there through the nervousness at the beginning, you know what I mean? And I see God in all of it, and I'm really, really grateful. And I'm just so grateful. I don't love crying either. I don't do it very often, but I do it more, and I feel like it waters my heart, and I get to be alive. And so it's like, yay! And when I see someone else cry and talk, I love it, because it's like, yeah, we really are connected through those deep parts. So I'm amazed and impressed, and I know when I first came into program and I was like, everything about this is like way too sane. I like these edges of extremes. And I was like, there's an extreme balance. I don't know. That appealed to me. But then it made me feel like I was walking on a tightrope and I'd fall off. And I won't, and I don't, and God's there. And I love your honesty in the journey, and in the terrifying pain of this addiction, and hiding in the closet the night before, and all that you went through going, and then coming back home, and all that. My scared mind wants to be done. Lose it and be done. Do whatever, be done. Go through the 12 steps, be done. And I love that this program never stops giving. This is a way of living that feeds my spirit, and I get to be touched by people on Friday night and hopefully, you know, make good choices on Saturday morning. And I'm just so glad. It was like everything I didn't want to have to continue. I wanted to be done and graduate and finish. And I'm just like, this is the miracle that we get to be here. And there's more. And I'm just so grateful that, I don't know, for what gets shared and what's inside and gets stirred up and just the courage. It's amazing. So that's all. Thanks.
I put my hands in yours. And together we can do what we can never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend on our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back, it works, and you work it, and you're worth it. Woo.